You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Finance Committee meets on the third Thursday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found at our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with leaders in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. Well, as we get older, more people around us die. And I can certainly testify to this. And having become disconnected from the natural cycles of life, we have pretty much lost the fundamental knowing of what death really looks like. And fear rushes in to fill the void. How can we transform our fears surrounding death and be with the dying more fully and more consciously? Our guest today is Nancy McMillan, author of the new book, The Call to the Far Shore, Carrying Our Loved Ones Through Dying, Death, and Beyond. Nancy's a psychotherapist and retired certified spiritual care practitioner with a master's degree in education and theology and much experience working in palliative care, intensive care, geriatrics, and bereavement. She lives outside of Kingston, Ontario. Well, hello, Nancy, and welcome to the Pathways Show.
Hello, Paul. Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, well, let's start by asking you to tell us about your mother and what inspired you to write this book.
Yes, well, I've had many experiences up close with dying and death, and all of that has brought me, you know, new pictures and stories, and, you know, I've had this great opportunity in my life through my own struggling through illness and then being with my parents has given me new pictures of what dying and death can be like. And certainly my mom, being with her for the long haul up to her death, you know, as an older person, caring for her as she was aging And it wasn't like she had a great openness to spiritual development at all. You know, she came from an age and stage where that really wasn't the primary mode that our older people went through. So, but I got to see that she started getting stripped away from her ego and from outer needs, and a different part of her started to emerge that I could then, you know, refer to her as a sage, which was an interesting experience for me to come to see my mother as a sage at her very end of life.
And how did this exhibit? I mean, what were these sage-like things that you noticed?
Sometimes it takes to the very end of our life for things to get stripped away so that we can see through things to what's most important. But towards the end, I can say, you know, verbatim what she said, which really struck me, was, "I accept whatever happens. I accept whatever happens. I accept everything that happens, and I will carry on." That just, you know, just pierced
That's
me.
pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's as good as it gets.
That's a pretty, that's a pretty good affirmation for a peaceful transition, it would seem to me.
Yes, isn't it? So that gives me hope that all of us, you know, at the end, there's something really important happening that, you know, as Ram Dass has said many times, that old age is a spiritualizing process. So that gives us hope, even if we haven't done so much homework in that regard, that our trials and tribulations and the actual aging and dying process spiritualizes us and perhaps enables those next steps to happen in a more peaceful and natural way. And I'm hoping to advocate for that natural dying is possible, and that there's a our bodies know how to do that if we let
And
them.
your was your mother very religious?
No, she wasn't. I
And
mean,
did she?
at a very primary level, she was from a childhood experience of going to Sunday school and wanting to be a good person. But no, she was not a churchgoer.
And
So,
had she ever taken psychedelic drugs?
no, not at all. No, you know, she's 97, you know, at that point.
Right. But I just interviewed an 86-year-old who wrote a book called Psychedelic Medicine at the End of Life. And you're talking about this experience of ultimate acceptance. And he says that, a psychedelic experience, a full-blown one, is akin to a near-death experience. It's akin, there's this whole letting go, the ego lets go. And so, I thought, oh, okay, well, I've done that. I've done a lot of LSD in my life. I think I might be okay. So,
Well, yes, we gotta lean into what we are being shown now. So we get near-death experience reports. We get people who have traveled the psychedelic world to give us a little picture of what we might be able to expect. And we can do our own spiritual work that opens up new vistas, and all of that can show us a path forward, because we've lost a path into dying and death and what might be on the other side. Most of us come from heritages that had a map of what dying looked like, how to do it, and what might be on the other side. We've kind of lost a lot of track of that. So we have to use our imaginations and the experiences that are coming through to start remembering and start renewing all those ancient symbols that we can come back to, and I think will help us lose some of the fear around death.
Oh, for sure. I think the teaching about hell has been one of the primary instigators of fear around death. Just the possibility of hell, which was a concept that was invented by the church, I think, early church or whatever. But okay, well, now the person who wrote the foreword to your book, I forget who it was, he says, I'm going to quote him, he says, "Noticing and deep listening to one who is dying is a spiritual act, a spiritual practice." And you were just talking about the spiritualization that happens with aging, but of course his sentence rings true for you, right? So this was you're teaching people how to attend to death and dying as a spiritual practice.
Absolutely, and yes. So that foreword is written by Robert Sordello, and yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful sentiment that we can lean into, because some of us lean away from death, and if we're up close to friends and family who are dying, it can feel a tricky thing to be up close to that and know how to engage with it.
Right.
But I think we're being shown that just having the courage to be there and be present and observe what's happening. Can we let our senses kind of open and see that there's more than just a tragedy or this feeling of only bereavement that is going to be coming to us? It gives us a new experience, and it opens up the space between us and the other person who is at the end of their life. And it allows death in the room, where so many people will try to go around it and make it the elephant in the room rather than the very strong presence that we can learn from and become in deeper relationship with each other, coming to conversations about what is it like to be dying? Tell me what it's like. Open that door up so that we can learn and engage with it and have the raw feelings deepen our relationship in that time.
Yeah, that reminds me of the first theme of your book. You outlined three themes for your book. And the first one is being with dying more fully and more consciously before we die. And the second one is tending loved ones at the time of death and immediately after in a way that honors their bodies and spirits. And number three, continuing the connection with loved ones after death, and by doing so, awakening to the realm of our ancestors. So this is pretty spiritual, all right. Tell us about why it's important to tend to their bodies after they die. You know, like for me, I don't like to go to memorial services, and I've argued with myself about it many times. And I'm saying, who am I going for? The dead person doesn't care anymore. why am I doing this? It's so depressing. So give me the hey, straighten hey. Me out here, Doc.
Okay. Wow. You know,
I'm sorry to sound cold. I'm just, you know.
No, you're being very real, and that's you're expressing what many, many people feel, and there's good reason to it, because things have become a little dead and meaningless in that realm. So we have to recreate, why are we doing any of this? So my experience of being up close to dying shows me that it's not just alive and you're dead. There is a process to dying, and a process at that last moment that can extend for some time. So the excarnating process, and being up close to my mom, who I brought her body home to my home, and we tended her body, washed and prepared it, and I got to tend it over 3 days. So I got a very up close sense of the changes in her body over those days, so that by the third day, I experienced what it was like for the energy to be pouring out of her body on the third day. So that just showed me that there is a process happening. And most of us have become so far away from it that that sounds, unexpected. So now that I know that, and from other experiences, so how do I let that inform my life? That excarnating is a process. How can I tend that? And my being up close to my mother during those days brought the reality of her death so viscerally home. And it was so clear that, you know, her spirit was no longer just in her body, but it was in the room. So how do I tend that? How do I allow and help that process continue? And the grieving that I was able to do by being so up close to it was so powerfully refreshing, which might be a strange word, but it gave me a momentum to do something with my grief and to be mobilized to see things in new ways.
Right.
This is, maybe a roundabout way of getting to the place where, is it possible that our dead need us? to help them continue going in the direction they need to go. That's a wondering. And because many Indigenous traditions have that as just a knowing, it makes me wonder how we can observe and wonder about that ourselves in cultures that have come far away from having a map. So in many Indigenous cultures, it's our being present and our tears and our rituals and our ceremonies help the deceased keep traveling on to where they need to go. So they keep going and not want to hang around here and hang on to people who, you know, because they don't know for sure how to move on.
Well, you take the position that we don't need to fear death, right?
Right.
And how do you suggest that we, I mean, don't you need a belief system that compensates for the possible fear of death? Like, for instance, I really gravitate towards the Eastern philosophies, and including Buddhism and Taoism and Hinduism even. And they believe in, most of them believe in reincarnation. And I find the idea of reincarnation to be consoling. It's sort of like, well, there is no death. It's just like you're changing clothes. You know, it's a transition and it's a new beginning. It's not just the end of something. And that actually makes it a lot easier for me to accept death and dying, to believe that. And it also gives meaning to my life, because I figure if I accumulate good karma by, you know, being a good person and doing good things, that's going to condition my next incarnation. At least that's the general consensus.
Right. I think so many people have, I think, a growing felt sense that that is just a strong possibility, you know, and I like to live my life as if that is the case, because it can only help us live a better, more meaningful life. Now, many people who don't have that, I have to be able to say, you know, what is it that gives you meaning? What gives you strength? What has helped you through hard times? And it's through peeling some of that back that they discover they do believe in certain things that they might not have been able to, you know, first of all, describe. But we can help people find what it is they do believe in if we're open enough.
You know, I think a lot of people put their faith in the idea of legacy. This, your legacy lives on after your body dies, and they want to, you know, they want to be remembered. But I think there's not very many people that have lived on this earth that are remembered for very long after they're dead. And it is kind of an ego trip to strive for immortality in that way, seems to me.
Yeah, it doesn't ring very meaningfully to me, but perhaps the essence of that is the wanting a connection still to be possible. Yeah, so that's certainly what opened up for me through my dad's dying, you know, having these experiences of him being still present with me after he died, and dreams that he was going to be still working with me and making my hands longer and stronger so that I could do more. You know, it was very strong images that I then leaned into and helped encourage that connection. And I would say that he's very present, and that continuing connection can be a consoling thing and can be a very helpful thing, that we can help each other. Our dead can help us and we can help them. The circle does continue and we can be in relationship with it, so that they're not gone, they're not lost, they're in the next room. And how can we create a door to that next room?
Well, you advocate for talking to dead people, right?
I do, to include them in our life.
Right.
And maybe that's going to look differently depending upon who we are and how we want to picture that. You know, it can go in different ways. We can have pictures up and include them, just their images and some of their stories. Or we can sit quietly and try to, in our meditative place, include them and say their names and just feel what resonance might be there. And then we can, certainly immediately after a loved one has died, there's a vulnerability that softens us and can we can be more sensitive to the bridge that might be there and pay attention to that.
What does a good death look like?
Well, that's going to have many different pictures, but the hope of a good death to me is where you've been able to participate in it and prepare for it and do it and not just have it done to you. And that means doing the work of letting go of things and completing relationships that might need some more tending, and feeling what it is like to let go at the edge and be with the fear of the unknown, and to still, as my mom, the sage now, says, accept it. Accept everything and keep going.
Right.
That's a challenge, and I think we have to all meet the different stages that small deaths take us to throughout our whole life and know what it's like to let go at different stages and ages so that we're ready for that bigger one.
So this involves active consent or some kind of positive intentionality to die, to be approaching your own death in a positive way, such that you're motivated to let go when the time is right. Is that what you're saying?
Right. And, you know, it might sound like a tall task, and it is a tall task. It is work. And I don't think we can get away from embracing what the limitations of our human life bring us, and also the possibilities of that there is more. But by befriending it, it means that we're participating with it, and we're going to eke out whatever wisdom and whatever meaning is really meant for us as human beings. And who knows what happens when we do that? When we soften enough and surrender, there is something that comes and meets us. And that is the liminal space that opens up a vista that you don't get to unless you're at the edge of something.
Right. So describe to me some ways that you help people get comfortable with their own dying.
Well, I think it's conversation about what their life's been about and what's given meaning, where their strengths are, where their fears are. It's just having open-hearted conversations. And you know, when fear comes up, you know, talking about the fears, talking about where our urge to control things still lies and how we can keep softening. And there's not one recipe for how to do that, but the conversation of being up close to it, getting more experience with it, helps open up the pathways for it to look differently in the end.
Right, right. And then chapter 8 is entitled Becoming an Ancestor. How can someone learn to connect with their ancestors?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, again, there's sort of the inner way and the outer way of the outer way, which is becoming more common, of looking into our own heritage and finding out the stories of our ancestors and finding out where we came from. And that experience for me came rather synchronistically as I was doing the other work of the inner work. And so I found out a great deal about my heritage. And that seemed to make me more grounded and a greater sense of belonging. And that all has shaped a sense and appreciation and gratitude for my forebears who went through an awful lot. And so that's the outer picture. And then there's the inner way of, can I become quiet enough and say my loved one's name, and in the quiet and the stillness of that, perceive a sense, a feeling. And, you know, the more sensitive we are to that phenomena, it will open up to more things, open up to dreams. Certainly the more I started it, the more came back to me. More dreams would come, and I would then, a whole panorama of my ancestors seemed to show up for me. But we can start in any way. The main thing is just to start somewhere and open up the door.
You know, you use the image of the far shore, which is in the subtitle of your book. You use this image throughout the book. What does it signify exactly?
Right. Well, it's just a beautiful image. It's a metaphor. It has a double entendre there with, for me, crossing the far shore to where my heritage of the Celtic Isles resides, and making a wave over there. And that brought that relationship to my heritage back. But also, of course, the far shore is the metaphor for where we may be going at the end of our life and of this life, and that it's the far shore is another destination. It's not a nothing. It's another place. And it can be as far away or as close as we make it. But it's a place we will discover.
So what do you hope is the result of your book getting out in the world?
Well, having more conversations about dying and death, and leaning into our own dying in any conscious way we can, and discovering that there can actually be a quality of beauty with death. And that's the surprise that many people find if they allow death to unfold. And if it's a natural death at a timely time, then the grace and the beauty that attends it is something that is a surprise. And I think more people need to know that that's a possibility. And I think that will help the fear find its right place, that we can make it a fear that we can hold and walk with and through to another possibility.
That's beautiful. And I want to thank you, Nancy. There's so much more we could explore, but we've actually run out of time. Before I go any further, I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is nancymacmillan.com. Macmillan is MACMILLAN, Nancy Macmillan, all one word, .com. And I'm sure that people can find out about your book and the rest of your work at that website.
Yeah.
And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry, you can play and or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Nancy Macmillan, author of The Call to the Far Shore, Carrying Our Loved Ones Through Dying, Death, and Beyond. I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO-FM in Portland, Oregon. Or perhaps you subscribe to the podcast version for free, which you can find at divination.com. That's spelled divination.com. Or better yet, search for Pathways Radio on my YouTube channel, where if you enjoy our conversations, you can give us a thumbs up and subscribe. And please feel free to forward a link to your friends. So this is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcasts. And thanks again to Nancy Macmillan and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways Podcast.
there. This is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored, non-commercial community